Okay, first thing, just this moment occurred to me. Did you notice where Joe Cornette went into the historic present? Mm-mm. Now they come.
No.
That's the historic present. It's a literary technique well known to writers of the old days, and my guess is Joe fell into it naturally. Mm-hmm. Just when things become exciting, you drop into the historic present. It's human nature. But if you remember, and we all did, we all watched The Civil War by Ken Burns. That was his first one. We all very carefully watched it. And he used some old-timers, professor emeriti of history. And one of those guys spoke in the historic present consistently. Hmm. And he became a favorite. He became a kind of a rock star while that was popular. Hmm. And it just occurred to me as I'm reading this to see Joe fall into it. And it gives me insight into more than I should be getting insight to from something like this. But that's my technique and my way of thinking. So, at this same time, when Joe Cornette is hitchhiking across the country or traveling by various means, my father, who graduated from high school with him, is in his freshman year at Bates College in Lewiston, Maine, and he is suffering very badly from homesickness, and is coming to Thanksgiving, which would be the same October. And Dad tells the story. He says, somewhere I heard that if you sit through half a class, you can walk out in the middle and get credit for having gone to that class, not be docked for a skip or a cut. It's called a cut. And so he said, I don't know how I did it. I was never a rule breaker before in my life, but that day before Thanksgiving, I went to my 8 o'clock a.m. class, and I got up in the middle of it, and I walked out, and I started hitchhiking home. And I don't remember his story exactly, but the first ride he got was with a salesman, a fellow selling shoe equipment. And that fellow took him to Freeport, Maine, to a big old shoe shop. And Dad had to sit in the car and wait till the fellow went in and did his business and came out again and drove him south some more. And I can only imagine that shoe shop must have been L.L. Bean's, or where L.L. Bean finally wound up. He must have been inventing his boot at about that same time. That would have been... I can't figure the date. Okay, Dad was born in 1911, so he was 17 in what? 11 plus 17 would be 28, mm-hmm. Right in there somewhere. And my guess is that was just about when L.L. Bean was inventing his boots. And that was the biggest, I remember that shop, because that was the L.L. Bean store when I was a freshman at Bates in 1964. In the middle of the night, one night, I and a bunch of buddies, somebody got hold of a car. We drove to Freeport because we know they were open 24/7 for the hunters. And that shoe shop had a wooden staircase that had to be 50 feet wide. Wow. I've never seen a wooden staircase as wide as that. And we went in, and the sales room was on the first floor. And one of the salespersons invited me alone to ride in the freight elevator with him up to the top floor to see the shoe shop. And I, being totally naive in those days, I did, and I won't tell you what kind of proposals I had to refuse in the elevator, but we got out on the top floor, and I did see that shoe shop, which was right out of the 20s, and that equipment was just as if it was there probably the day my father sat outside in the car anyway. Dad's second ride, or one of Dad's rides, was with a coffin salesman in a hearse. And he was carrying his coffin around and peddling it from funeral home to funeral home, and Dad rode with him for a while and finally got to Concord, quite exhausted. And I think somehow, I don't remember, but somehow he got from Concord to Hopkinton on public transportation. There was some kind of a trolley car or something, but I could be wrong about that, so the historians will know more than I. And when he got to Hopkinton Village, there was a neighbor who spotted him and drove him into Kentucook. And he walked down through the fields, what's now the Houston Farm, might have been then for all I know, and Amesbury Park Village, which was not there, of course. He walked down below there, down below what I would call the A&P, but it's now the Villager, and forded the Amesbury River, now called the Warner, and walked up through the fields and threw himself weeping into his mother's arms, in his own words. In the early 70s, when I moved back here to town, I hitchhiked to Kennebunk, Maine, to visit friends. And the morning after that, it was in the early spring, the morning after that, I hitchhiked home, and I decided to come the Milk Route through 202, through Rochester, to avoid the highway. And I got almost no rides. So I got a very few, very short rides, and I was just exhausted. And I think I must have walked 30 miles that day. And I remember getting up to the top of the hill with the apple orchard. What's that hill called? Up above River Hill.
Carter Hill.
I was up on Carter Hill, and I can remember drinking out of a sap bucket. The buckets were hanging on the tree, and I tipped the sap bucket over and to get a drink. I was seriously dehydrated. I was young and had no idea about things, and dumped it all over myself and staggered down the hill to the River Hill store. Was open. It was evening, but it was open, and I walked in, and I couldn't stay because I couldn't stop moving. If I stopped moving, my legs would cramp. I remember looking desperately for a chair to sit down in. I couldn't imagine where there wasn't a chair in a grocery store. So I left from there and went across the bridge. I think it was still the old iron bridge, and leaned against the guardrail. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I was finished. And coming down the road towards Concord was David. Let me see. Bobby Bauer is still up there on Little Hill farming. That was his brother, David Bauer, from the Bauer farm on Little Hill. And he stopped and rolled his window down. And he said, "Dan, you look sick." And I said, "David, I think I may be." And he said, "Well, I'll be happy to take you home." And I said, "I wish you would." He turned his car around. He drove me home. So there you have it. All three of us ran into a neighbor who saw things clearly and took care of us, and that's the way it is.